Okay, hi, so my name is Catherine Haymans. I'm from the University of Edinburgh, and I've been working on something called the STAGES project, an acronym for the Space Telescope A901-902 Galaxy Evolution Survey.
That's a fantastic acronym, of course, like in any good astronomy acronym.
You're nothing in astronomy unless you've got an acronym.
Now, of course, the Space Telescope we're talking about here is the Hubble Space Telescope.
Exactly, but we actually also have data from the XNM Space Telescope, which is an X-ray telescope, and the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is an infrared telescope. So there are many space telescopes that we've been using for this project, but the big thing we've been working on is the Hubble Space Telescope data.
And you've collected all this data on the same object, or objects, if you like. Explain, what is it, this 901-902 part of the acronym STAGES?
We've been looking at a very dense region of the universe. It's a massive supercluster, and it has this name, Abel-901-902. Now, this is a cluster that was first seen by a guy called George Ogden Abel, and he went and looked through all of the observations taken by the Palomar telescope a long time ago, and he found over 4,000 clusters, and this was the 901st and 902nd cluster that he found.
It's fantastic amount of work, isn't it? This guy looked at...
I know.
How many in total? I mean,
his whole career was spent looking at images from the Palomar telescope, which was at the time, you know, the best telescope in the world, and it's an amazing resource. I'm sure he did lots of other science as well, but this is the best resource really for finding really massive clusters in the universe.
It must have been a great job, you know, with one of the finest instruments at the time.
Yeah.
Just going, oh, there's one.
Yeah.
Another one. There's another one. Just put your name in front of all of them. You know, hundreds of these objects.
Oh. Yeah. No, he's. I found a photograph of him the other day, and he's quite a legend.
So Abel-901-902,
mm-hmm.
It's a cluster of galaxies.
Yeah, we call it a supercluster galaxy. So our Milky Way galaxy is in something called a local group. There are maybe a few tens of galaxies in our local group. Now, cluster is sort of more than that, so it's about 100 galaxies kind of all bound together, all gravitationally bound together. And then a supercluster is a cluster of clusters. And in this case, there are four clusters in this system that are all bound together. They're all at the same redshift or the same distance from the Earth. And, we call it a supercluster. Just a cluster of clusters.
How many galaxies are there in the supercluster?
Okay, so there are a couple of thousand galaxies in this supercluster, and the supercluster has got four clusters in it, and each one of them has got several hundred galaxies in it.
So why the two different names? Why Abel-901 and then Abel-902?
So when Abel was looking at this cluster, what he called Abel-901, we've resolved now as two separate structures, so we call that 901A and 901B, but they're sisters, and he thought that was one. And then he saw another one off to the south, which he called 902, which we now know to be connected to 901. And then our observations have found this other fourth group of galaxies, very small cluster, off to the west.
So even with the 200-inch Palomar telescope, he would have just seen these objects as if a fuzzy blob? Is this why he gave him only one name?
No, I think he just wouldn't have seen that there were lots of galaxies there. So he just would have seen the brightest galaxies and sort of lumped them together as a group, and the one that he missed is slightly fainter, so he just wouldn't have seen it in the Palomar data.
Hmm. When you're looking at the supercluster on the sky, for instance, can you give us an idea of how far apart the individual bits of the supercluster are?
Okay, so it's about the size of the full moon on the sky when you look up. And so they're sort of positioned, I guess maybe there's maybe about a quarter of the moon between them, or if you understand arc minutes, there's maybe about 10 arc minutes between each of these clusters on the sky.
Hmm. Okay, so what's the fascination with the supercluster? Why have you got the Hubble Space Telescope to spare it? Why have you collected data from other space telescopes? Why?
Okay, well, the question that we want to answer with this STAGES survey is what's happening to galaxies in these sort of dense environments in the universe. So we know that our Milky Way galaxy is a spiral galaxy. It's blue, it's young, it's forming stars. And when we look at galaxies, we know that they, as they grow older, they grow redder, their gas burns out, they get dustier because the stars are dying, and we call them old, red and dead. Now when we look at these dense environments like a supercluster, we find lots of these old, red and dead galaxies in the centre of these clusters, and we see these spiral galaxies much like our Milky Way at the edges. And so what we wanted to answer was, is it just when the dark matter or the gravity is pulling these spiral galaxies into the cluster, are they just getting older and that's why they get redder as they go towards the centre? Or is there some other sort of physical mechanism, some process that is transforming these galaxies as they fall into this massive supercluster? And that's what we wanted to try and answer with this data.
So it's simply asking, do the galaxies look the way they do because they're just getting older, or are they somehow interacting, or something's happening to them to make them change their appearance?
Exactly, yeah. What's making them transform? Is it nature or is it nurture?
Okay, so how do you go about doing this?
Okay, so the first thing that we did was get lots of different multicolour data just to try and work out what all these different galaxies were, see if there was anything interesting, were there lots of massive black holes, for example. Nothing obvious there. Then we went and looked at the environment that these galaxies were in. So we looked at the hot gas in these clusters, so that was using X-ray observations. And what I've been working on specifically is to look at the dark matter environment. It's really the dark matter in this region that's determining sort of what happens to these galaxies. It's how they move and how they, which brings them to interact with each other. So yeah, we've been mapping out that dark matter in this region.
You might say that the principal characteristic of dark matter is that it is dark.
Yes.
And you can't see it. So my question to you is, how did you work out what the dark matter distribution is
so
in this cluster?
Dark matter is dark, that's true. Some people say we've only invented it to make our equations work.
Is that true?
No, it's not true. There really is something out there that we can't see. We've tried lots of different observations now to understand this phenomenon that is dark matter, that it really does appear to be something out there that has lots of mass, but we can't see it. Now what we use is a technique called lensing to try and work out where the dark matter is and how much of it is. So how can we see this invisible dark matter? Well, if you look out of your window, how do you know that the glass in your window is there? The glass is invisible. Well, now imagine that there are some raindrops on your window, and they're going to distort your view through your window, so you know that the window's there, that the light is distorted by the raindrops on the window. Okay, now how am I using this to actually detect dark matter? Well, now I'm on the Earth. My view is now to the very distant universe. And it's the dark matter around the cluster that we're looking at that's now distorting that view. So as the light comes towards us from these very distant galaxies, the dark matter distorts the way that that light travels, so we say that it's lensed. What that does is it changes the shapes of these very distant galaxies. If you like, it makes them a little bit more like bananas. That's kind of the effect that you have. And so it's what we do is we go and get the Hubble Space Telescope to look at the galaxies behind the cluster. Their light has been distorted by the dark matter in the cluster. It makes these galaxies look slightly more banana-like. And we detect that distortion, or that change in the shapes of the distant galaxies, and use that to tell us where the dark matter is and how much of it there is.
This is a particular type of lensing, isn't it?
Yeah, so there are three different types of lensing. There's strong lensing, weak lensing, and micro lensing. This is called, what we've been using is called weak lensing. So it's a very, very weak effect, which is why we need the Hubble Space Telescope to look for it. Hubble's great in this respect because it lets us really see clearly the images of these very distant faint galaxies and detect this very weak distortion, or, if you like, a signature that dark matter leaves on the images of faint galaxies.
In contrast to strong lensing, remind us what strong lensing is.
Okay, so strong lensing. Some of you might have seen pictures of really massive clusters of galaxies, and you see these kind of arc-like features around it. Now, that's strong lensing. That's when the images of galaxies are really distorted by the dark matter. It's exactly the same effect for weak lensing, just weaker. So they still get sort of bent, sort of like bananas, like these big arcs, but it's nothing as dramatic as you see in these really massive images of, I guess, 1689, just for another number for you, if you want to do a Google search.
Why do we have to use a space telescope to do this?
So I guess you're all familiar with the nursery rhyme, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Okay, now, stars do not twinkle up in space. And the reason why you see the stars twinkling from the ground is just because of the atmosphere. Now, we're trying to detect this really weak signature from the dark matter that's lensing the light from these distant galaxies. And so the atmosphere is a bit of a problem. So Hubble's great for that. It's above the atmosphere. So we don't see this sort of twinkling effect that kind of blurs out the images of the galaxies. We see the images of these faint galaxies very clearly, and we can use that the keen vision that Hubble has to actually detect this signature that dark matter is leaving on these faint galaxies.
So essentially, you want to measure the shape of these background galaxies very, very accurately, and that means you have to have the best optics so that the resolution is the highest it could possibly be, so you can measure these shapes. They're
exactly
not all blurred out.
Yeah.
Okay, so what then?
What then? Okay. Well, once you measure the shapes of these galaxies, the shapes tell you the distortion that the dark matter's introduced, how it's changed the light. And then the really neat thing about lensing is that you can go directly from Einstein's theory of general relativity directly to a mass map. Now, there are a couple of pages of algebra in there, but there are no assumptions that we have to make. All we do is we say, we know, we take Einstein's general relativity principle as correct, and that tells us that mass curves space-time. It's that curvature that's distorting the path of the light. And we can then invert that process, so we can go back, we can say we've measured the distortion, what was the mass that made that in the first place? Mm. And then we can make these beautiful maps of the dark matter. So we've made the highest resolution image of dark matter that has been seen to date, of this massive supercluster. And what we're finding is that the densest regions of dark matter are holding the oldest, reddest, deadest galaxies, which is what we'd expect. And we're also actually starting to see substructure as well. So these sort of clusters aren't just sort of big spherical balls of dark matter. They have shape and structure. You can even see sort of plumes of dark matter coming out. Almost feels like they're almost pulling in galaxies from the outskirts of the cluster, but that's maybe taking things a bit too far.
What has making the map of the dark matter in the supercluster helped you towards answering your main question, which is, how do these galaxies evolve? What physical process is causing these galaxies to change their shape and their nature? What has the dark matter map told you about that?
Well, what we found is a really interesting population of galaxies that we don't see anywhere else in the universe. We just see them in this dense environment of clusters. So they seem to be sort of galaxies experiencing some sort of transformation. Now, they're not in the densest regions of the cluster. They seem to be sort of in what we say in intermediate density regions. It seems to be where they're first experiencing the pull of dark matter that this population of galaxies that are transforming sort of appear to live. So sort of on the outskirts of the cluster, we're finding these sort of blue spiral galaxies like our Milky Way. In the very densest regions of the dark matter, we find the old red and dead galaxies, and in the intermediate region, we're finding this transformation population, which are really interesting. This is work done by Christian Wolf at Oxford University, and what we're finding is that we're finding spiral galaxies, so like our Milky Way galaxy, have the same morphology, but they're red, which means there's a lot of dust in the galaxy. So they're still forming stars, but there's a lot of dust there as well. So it's a bit of a puzzle understanding why they're there, but we think it's our first clues to understanding galaxy evolution in these dense environments.
What's the next step?
What's the next step? Well, all of our data is about to go public, so we're hoping lots of other people will look at it to also get their opinions on it. There's a whole wealth of data in this supercluster. But, you know, there are just four clusters in this region, and so, you know, what if what we're finding is just related to these clusters? So we'd like to go out and look at more clusters. We'd also like to look at clusters at a different epoch in the university's history. So what we're finding might be something special just to this particular epoch in the university's history. What if we go back to earlier times in the university, would we find something different? So maybe looking at higher redshift clusters is also a new thing to look at.
So you're going to work through the Abel catalogue, perhaps?
Well, there are over 4,000 of them. I'm not sure we'd get enough Hubble time to do that. And we have to fix Hubble first as well.
We wish you all the best for continuing the research, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for talking to me today, and thanks for listening.